looks like everyone is fairly well situated, so I'll call up the next case. This is docket number 68030, Perry versus Terrible Herbst. Mr. Schrader, are you ready to proceed?
I am.
All right, come on up.
And if I may, would you have 3 minutes of my time?
Yes, you may.
Okay. We are on top of that as well. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, may it please the court. I'm Bradley Schrager, and I'm here for appellant Deborah Perry. Ms. Perry left her employment with the respondent about 27 months before her complaint was filed in this matter. Her claims were dismissed by the district court to establish or determine that a 2-year statute of limitations applied to claims under the minimum wage amendment on motion of respondent. Now, all the parties understand, in fact, they must, that there is no limitation expressed in the minimum wage amendment for claims made under its provisions. None is provided for it. The dispute here is over what happens when courts realize that. What the courts do when that's the truth, granting the jurisprudential commonplace that civil actions are normally subject to some limitation. Ms. Perry's argument is rather straightforward and simple. This is exactly the situation for which NRS 11220 exists. NRS 11220 says an action for relief, not herein before provided for, must be commenced within 4 years after the cause of action shall have accrued. That has been the law in Nevada since 1911. Ms. Perry's claims, back to her entire suit, is an action not herein before provided for. In fact, her claims are claims that could have existed prior to the adoption or enactment of the minimum wage amendment in 2006. She claims that she was paid less than the top-tier minimum wage, more than the lower tier, but she was not provided appropriate health insurance, and the health insurance was of such low quality that it would not qualify as health insurance on any woman anyway. Prior to 2006, there was no two-tier system. There was no health benefits tie-in. She is sued under the express right of action contained within Section 16B of the Minimum Wage Amendment. An employee claiming a violation of this section may bring an action against his or her employer in the courts of this state to enforce the provisions of this section. It has long been a commonplace, as the Supreme Court recognized in the Franchise Tax Board versus of California back in 1983, that suits arise under the law that creates the cause of action. Her cause of action was created by the Minimum Wage Amendment.
But it was silent as to a statute of limitations, but 608260 did provide a 2-year statute of limitations, and tell me why that we shouldn't apply that as opposed to the catch-all.
Well, you know, there's a number of reasons why that wouldn't apply. Number one, we didn't sue under that. Just as a sort of frank matter, we sue under the minimum wage amendment, which did not have an express statute of limitations.
But go ahead.
Councilman Alfaro's minimum wage amendment replaced what was previously in the books as minimum wage.
That's correct. Let me put it this way. In our view, if not entirely superseded, what the minimum wage amendment did was make 608250 and 608260 more about. There's nothing left for it to do. None of its terms are actually functional and applying.
But the concern we may have is when we look at 11220, it says an action for relief not here and before provided. And so there was, now we've created a new minimum wage verbiage. So the question really comes down to, isn't there some traction that has linkage? Because it's the same general subject matter, except for the dollars and cents.
Well, it's the same general area, therefore, the former statutes,
because we three both of them are not in effect still.
Correct.
Only one is.
Correct. Which is the minimum wage.
We'll see the other.
So then how then could, in fact, the old statute of limitations, which pointed toward 608250, which has filled up all these things that the labor commission doesn't do anymore, how we set the minimum wage, all the exceptions, all those things, if 260, the statute of limitations under 250 is no longer extant, really. How can that 2-year statute of limitations still control
Why would you declare invalid the whole of 260? It seems to me, and I understand it's tricky, but it seems to me you would simply delete pursuant to the provisions of 608-250. I don't know whether the Labor Commissioner still has any regulations that prescribe the minimum wage pursuant to the NWA. I don't know if that's true or not, but take that out too if he's not doing that any longer. But you would take that language out, and the remainder would still work as a statute of limitations applicable to the NWA. I know it's not elegant, but what's wrong with that argument?
Well, what was wrong with it is who's taking it out? Are you suggesting that the court would sever it out?
You would say that the NWA impliedly repealed so much of NRS 608-260 as was obviated by the enactment of the NWA, which is to say minimum wage set by the Labor Commissioner pursuant to 250. Rather, the minimum wage is set by the terms of the NWA. But it's so close as far as thematically and substantively what's trying to be accomplished there. Why wouldn't you do it that way? It has the beauty of matching up the record preservation mandates of the existing law and so on and so forth. Now, we're dealing with initiative or constitutional amendments, so it's difficult to reconcile how the rules of construction interact. But to me, that's a very plausible solution. I'm not sure it's correct.
Let me address why I don't think it's correct.
Okay.
In essence, even if you are seven, you are living strictly on a statute that no longer applies to the minimum wage amendment. 608-260 was adopted specifically to point to 608-250. 608-250 is basically dead.
How do you know that I get that it was adopted originally to do that, but if you have an implied repeal of the segment of it, that you're saying that it guts it completely and the whole is gone.
250.
Yes, and 260 both. You're saying 260 is all the way out of the books because of the NWA?
No, I would not go that far.
Okay, how far would you go?
Well, I see people still sue under 250. In fact, I think, what was the answer case?
Terry versus Sacco.
Exactly. That was brought under 250. I wouldn't bring a case under 250 now, because why would I? Especially if my claims were like Ms. Perry's, which are specifically tied to the two-tier minimum wage. I wouldn't go to 250 because it simply doesn't speak to her claims. Her claims aren't made possible by it.
But you're saying that the statute retains validity for claims like the Terry claims, the dancers' claims in Terry that are pursuant to 250.
Well, someone who would make a claim under 250 would be subjecting themselves to the statute of limitations.
Then why would you not pick this as the closest analogous statute and not do the carving that I'm suggesting, but just say this is in the same exact neighborhood and is specific to this context, minimum wage? Why wouldn't we use it on that rubric?
Yeah. Well, the sort of bottom line answer is we don't employ borrowing in state law. Borrowing is a particularly federal.
There's not a Nevada case that says borrowing is anathema.
No, but the reason why borrowing is a particularly federal theory or application, federal canon, is because federal law up through the 1990s didn't have a catch-all statute like 11-220. They do now, and those federal statutes that are without statutes of limitations, federal courts are really too far into arguing over what was the most analogous statute.
But it also drives them into state law issues that were inappropriate for federal contemplation. I'm not sure that the same problems that arose in the federal borrowing universe where they're borrowing federal to state apply in the state context. Do you have a case law on that?
No, I would see that those problems wouldn't arise. If you were to adopt state-level borrowing, you would still be looking for an analogous statute of limitations. That would be something that people would litigate over again and again to get to that analogous statute, and it would be tension. Under 11-220, we have a very clear catch-all. And I think we can presume, in fact, it's an unrebuttable presumption here in Nevada, that lawmakers and the people know the law.
That's a questionable presumption, though. Scalia say that that's one of the most disputable presumptions that there is in statutory construction.
It's a fiction that we need to live by to get through the legal day. It seems to me that we can, by that fiction, presume that the drafters of the amendment, by not including a statute of limitation, might have intended the four-year statute of limitation. It would have been much clearer had they simply said, we're going to the statute of limitations for this particular provision. Absolutely right. No argument.
You don't expect that to be a generality. I mean, it was enacted in the context. I mean, to me, that's significant.
In a way that it should still relate to 215-260, because that's a connection I don't see.
Okay.
You know, it is very clear that through the minimum wage amendment, its drafters intended to supplant, replace, supersede, whatever word you want to call it, even if it's not scaling it out to us.
It implied it repealed the whole of 215-260. So you're saying they're still there.
They're still there. There is very little left for 215-260 to do. In the Thomas case, it became clear that the exceptions that were in 250 sub 2 were no longer operative. Like, no longer operative at all. There are entire swaths of 250 section 1 that are no longer operative. Right? The Labor Commission can no longer decide that it's against the public interest to raise the minimum wage. He or she is commanded by the state constitution to follow a particular formula. The Labor Commission no longer promulgates the minimum wage raise by regulation. It's now done through a formula, and it's announced through a bulletin every year. There isn't really much for 250-260 left to do at all.
So are you arguing that it kind of repealed the entirety of it?
Well, actually, I would like to move away from repeal of those sections for a moment and say that the minimum wage amendment exists in and of itself. It is, in fact, sui generis. It is an entirely new thing. Right? It is whole, it is complete. It doesn't need to rely on or need 608-250 or 608-260 to function. In fact, if those statutes had never existed, it would be a fully formed and usable minimum wage law for the state of Nevada.
244, you want to reserve it or keep going?
I'm going to reserve it.
Okay. Hi, Mr. Roscoe, you ready?
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Montgomery Peck of Little Bendelson, and I represent the respondent, Terrible Herbst, in this matter. The Court has already kind of hit on the issues that's before it. Appellant respondent's fundamental difference in this case can be boiled down to this. Appellant argues that the MWA is unique and standalone, where respondents maintain that the MWA must be harmonized with the existing 608 minimum wage statute of limitations as laid out in Thomas. And the reason for this difference is simple, Your Honors, because under Thomas, they lose. Specifically, they can't do the Thomas analysis because they are lacking what they don't have, which is a conflicting term. They don't have a term in the minimum wage amendment that says the statute of limitations is 4 years. That is what Thomas stands for.
But counsel, we have nothing that says what the statute of limitations is going to be. We have some inherent problems because when you have, in essence, a linear type of initiative, you can't touch the statute for 3 years. Which creates problematic. And the statute that we've been talking about, and Justice Pickering was peppering counsel with, 608-260, it relates specifically to 608-250. Why should we have the eligibility when in fact there's another catch-all provision, 11-220, that's available to apply?
That's correct, Your Honor. The reason why is because you have to look at the context. context of how the minimum wage amendment was passed. Part of that, its origins, was in the vote referendum, which was raise the minimum wage. That statement in and of itself implies that there was an existing minimum wage. Of course, that existing minimum wage was the existing category.
There's no relation back in the statute. I guess that's for me part of the sticking
point. I understand what Your Honor is saying, and part of that relation back would be, first of all, in 608.250, it's still called the minimum wage. The statement itself, the minimum wage, refers to the floor, or the minimum compensation that you can pay an hourly employee. It's determined in a different way, pursuant to the minimum wage amendment, but it's
that
still...
constitutional as opposed to statute, Jerry.
I mean, and they're both dealing with the minimum wage. That's how you reconcile the two.
But what do you do with 260? I mean, Justice Douglas is correct. By its literal terms, it applies to claims brought pursuant to minimum wage established by regulation of the Labor Commissioner pursuant to NRS 250, or 608-250. Unless we take that language out, by its terms, that statute does not apply to the claims this plaintiff is asserting, correct?
And Your Honor, that's correct. You would have to be, when you look, and to put that in context, 608.260, when you reference 608.250, we have to look back to when that was passed. When 608.250 was passed, that was the minimum wage in the past.
Understand. I mean, we understand that point, but the question is, can we do that sort of surgery to harmonize these two, given that we do have 11.220, which says if there's nothing else provided, let's go with 4 years. The question is, should we prefer this more specific, closer to the statute that by its terms doesn't apply? Do we do surgery on it?
And I would say yes. I would say that's how you harmonize it, Your Honor. I would say that the 260 starts out with if any employer pays any employee a lesser amount than the minimum wage. And the minimum wage is now determined differently.
So you would have us
delete the prescribed by regulation of the Labor Commissioner pursuant to the provisions of NRS 608-250.
You take that phrase out as implied being appealed by... Or it's not really implied to repeal if something's left of a claim under 250, right?
Well, under 608-250, if I'm understanding your question correctly, Your Honor, is not hollowed out as necessarily as opposing counsel has made out to be. There are certain terms that I was saying, not only the minimum wage, but there's the prescription of Labor Commission regulations. There's also the subsection 3, which makes it unlawful to contract around the minimum wage, which is consistent with the minimum wage amendment. So there's still something to 608-250, and that's the point of 608-250 not being expressly repealed by the minimum wage amendment. That still gives it life.
So if you were writing this and you wanted to author an opinion that said this 260 two-year statute of limitations is controlling here, on what logic would you articulate that rule?
I would articulate that rule based on there not being a conflict, a conflicting term within the minimum wage amendment as to statute of limitations.
So what do you do with the fact that by its literal terms, this statute does not apply to a Minimum Wage Act claim? You just ignore the fact that the Minimum Wage Act claim is not a claim brought under regulations that the Labor Commissioner has prescribed pursuant to 608-250?
No, I would harmonize a minimum wage claim under the minimum wage amendment and under NRS 608-250. And the reason I would do that, Your Honor, is because although NRS 608-250 is mostly a title now of the Nevada minimum wage, there is still right to it because that's what the statutes NRS 608-270, 280, and 290, which is what empowers the Labor Commissioner, is based off of. All three of those statutes refer back to 608-250. So without that, arguably the Labor Commissioner can no longer enforce the minimum wage. And that doesn't make any sense because there's no conflicting language in the minimum wage for that. Even under opposing counsel's premise that the minimum wage amendment has this remedial purpose, there would be no reason to take out this alternative relief you can seek under the Labor Commissioner. And the Labor Commissioner can go beyond the private right of action that an employee can do, because the Labor Commissioner can assess administrative fines, can pursue criminal action through the district.
But we were talking now about fines, so we're talking about the age category only. And the labor commissioner can't contravene, so to speak, that ability pursuant to this new constitutional change. Now, I guess the question I want to ask, how's the made representations that certain parts of 608-260 and certain are still kind of alive, 250 are alive, we're talking about this other case. And if you sue that way, this clearly applies. But what if, in fact, as we had before us, what are you suing under this opposed to that?
Well, I think Thomas and the subsequent cases sort of addressed that. I think they addressed it because in Thomas, the claim was brought under the minimum wage amendment, Your Honor. And in order to evaluate that claim, the court looked to evaluating, well, what is the minimum wage right now? It's under both. It's under both the minimum wage amendment and the statutory scheme in 608-250. So unless there's conflicting language in 608-250 from there, we are going to read those together. And I think that was the purpose of Thomas.
Arguing then that we should borrow the limitation in 260. I don't see that that's really briefed, but...
I don't think it's a borrowing analysis, Your Honor, because the borrowing analysis is an analysis that the court performs, as in those federal cases, when there isn't an existing statutory scheme. And that's the difference here. The difference here is there was a minimum wage under 608-250 accepted. When the minimum wage amendment was passed, the only things that should be taken out in the new minimum wage under both is anything that conflicts, and that's it. If they can be read together harmoniously, they should.
But the plain language of 260 restricts that statute of limitation to claims brought pursuant to regulations establishing the minimum wage by the Labor Commissioner under NRS 608-250. So plain language reading of 260 doesn't apply to these claims.
Well, I would say under 250, the minimum wage, the term minimum wage is now set in a different way. Under the minimum wage amendment, I would say that the Labor Commissioner still prescribes regulation that relates to the minimum wage. That hasn't been carved out by the minimum wage amendment. Now, I would also say that for all intents and purposes, the Labor Commissioner still does what 608-250
says. So what regulations are they suing under in this case that were enacted by the Labor Commissioner?
They are suing under the minimum wage amendment just for minimum wage.
So they're not suing under any regulations promulgated by the Labor Commission?
No, but I'm addressing
the statute.
What still exists and why that statute still can be read together with the minimum wage amendment. And part of that, Your Honor, is because the Labor Commissioner under 608-250 can prescribe the increases in the minimum wage in accordance with those prescribed by federal law. Those increases and the establishment of the minimum wage, that's still what the Labor Commissioner does, Your Honor. The Labor Commissioner, prior to the minimum wage amendment, published a bulletin. The bulletin said what the lowest rate was for the minimum wage. Now, that calculation has changed, and how that's determined, that's still what the Labor Commissioner must do. That's how the Labor Commissioner publishes under the minimum wage amendment. Is that same act?
What's the regulatory site for that? Do you have an administrative code site for that?
So the Labor Commissioner under 608-250 has always prescribed the minimum wage.
And it continues to do so?
And it continues to do so through a bulletin. In the minimum wage amendment, it says that the governor or the state agency appointed by the governor, which is the Labor Commissioner, now publishes. But for all intents and purposes, the Labor Commissioner has been doing the same thing. Has been publishing a notice about what the minimum wage was. It went from being 1 year to not being 2 years. And that's the different job. So that's why I'm saying, for all intents and purposes, under 608-250, the Labor Commissioner is still doing the same thing.
So your position, just to nail it down, because we have to write something that holds something in this case, your position would be that literally 260 still applies to a claim under the MWA because all except for the reference to 250.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So you would only, if we were carving out language, you would only carve out pursuant to the provisions of NRS 608-250.
Or you could read it another way and you could say that minimum wage in NRS 608-250, the term minimum wage now incorporates minimum wage amendment.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
So I have one, I have one question for you as to how this comports with 608-115. The record retention requirement under the statute is 2 years. How does that interplay with your argument?
Correct, Your Honor, and that is something that we have brought up in our briefs, and that is the record-keeping requirement under 608 reflects that the statute of limitations is 2 years. It goes hand-in-hand with it and shows that employers should maintain 2 years' worth of records. And that, by the way, Your Honor, not only leads back to the Nevada minimum wage of 1965, which in and of itself is based and modeled after the FLSA, but that's the same record statute of limitations that typically under the FLSA. So it shows not only that the federal and the state legislatures have looked at this issue, but they've also determined that 2 years is a reasonable amount of time for employers. And it makes sense, Your Honor, because when someone has a claim potentially for the minimum wage, what are they basing it off of? They're basing it on the receipt paycheck, which is every 2 weeks normal. It is in the state of Nevada. And that gives a reasonable requirement for employers. It's not an open door kind of, if you're getting your paychecks every 2 weeks and you're on notice every 2 weeks that your pay might be off, then 2 years is a reasonable amount of time for all the employees in the state of Nevada to keep records for all of their employees.
So as a practical matter, if somebody brings a claim three or four years later, and they're only required to keep the records for 2 years, where does that leave the...
That's going to create a problem, Your Honor.
It's unless to tell the legislature to amend it.
And that creates a consistency problem, Your Honor. Right now it's consistent.
Counsel, why should that create a consistency problem for owners of the companies determine that they weren't going to pay what they were supposed to pay? If in fact, the employee or past employee can come forward with their W-2 or whatever the terminology is for the end of the year statement for 3 or 4 years and say, I made this much money at this rate, they have that burden of proof. So, dealing with the IRS, they don't just say, that's it, keep moving your records and you're good to go if you don't have anything else. So, that's not an argument in terms of why this should only be valid if we look at the 2 year. There's some other considerations that could possibly come into play. And I'm a little concerned because the employers roll the dice when they didn't pay. And should we award and say, oh, we're going to go back 2 years? Wouldn't we have clearly a violation? I think we have nothing on the table that this is not a violation. The only issue is how far do we go back?
Yeah, I understand Your Honor's question, and I think that legislatures who have looked at it have determined that 2 years is the appropriate period.
If they had looked at it, I think we have a regulation that is specific. And so the question still for you is, you want to harmonize. The other one is very specific as to what it applies to. And it doesn't say, and other related statutes pertain to minimum wage. So how do we fold it in so when this is put on print, black and white paper, the law of the Supreme Court doesn't look stupid for this reason?
And I think the converse of that, of what Your Honor is pointing out about 2 years, is that I think it goes back to the reflection of the realistic nature of how minimum wage claims are brought. I mean, most of these claims, like the current claim before you, is not usually something where an employee thought they had the wrong rate being paid and goes to their employer and says, my paycheck's wrong. That's not the case at all. Almost universally, all of these cases are off-the-clock work, or, as it is here,
that's a whole other issue we don't need to go down there because that just kind of frames it up why it's off-the-clock work in some cases.
Well,
in cases,
I guess what the point I'm trying to make, Your Honor, is that I think the 2 year statute of limitations is kind of taking all those factors into account and is also taking into account the employer's burden. The employer's burden of, well, how long do they need to maintain records? And I think the Nevada law of 608.115 reflects what the federal law is, and it shows what legislatures have already looked at.
As I indicated, it's not reasonable to shift the burden to the employee and see what the records indicate?
Well, I mean, there is still a burden on the employer, Your Honor. 2 years of work records is a large amount of records to keep just on pay. And the employee, Your Honor, if the employer doesn't have those records, courts oftentimes, under FLSA law, will hold that against as a presumption against the employer.
So as a personal point, with my own taxes, I keep taxes for so many years just in case I get a friendly call from the IRS and they want to see what little I made. I don't think that's too much of a burden. My W-2 is only one sheet. It's not, I don't keep all my pay stubs for each, every 2 week period. So it's not that voluminous. So I'm having some difficulties. We sometimes have shared burden, but we don't have an exclusive burden on one side only.
And I know all the burden issues haven't been briefed before the court, Your Honor, but I would just go back to what the statute holds and what the statute of limitations holds. And both of those revolve around 2 years. So it's at least that obviously been looked at by the Nevada legislature in the context of wage and hour.
Well, thank you for your arguments today. Colleagues, any other questions?
If you have 2 minutes to
okay.
Oh, wait.
Mr. Schrader has additional time.
No, Mr. Schrader does. Yes. Any other questions?
Thank you, Your Honor.
No? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. You know, when you want to talk about harmonizing, I think we kind of have everything a bit backwards. We are not meant to be harmonizing the Constitution with Nevada statutes. It is quite the opposite. The doctrine of constitutional supremacy says that the Constitution comes first. We harmonize statutes in keeping with the Constitution.
Right, but in this case, the NWA didn't indicate a statute of limitation, so we got to find one somewhere, and you're saying it should be the catch-all,
yep.
Even though there are indications in other provisions that it's a 2-year statute of limitation.
What I would like to also hear how you would harmonize with your take on 608.115,
record retention.
Sure. You know, on the FLSA, rules of violations require 3 years. Not a record keeping, but your liability can reach 3 years. There can be tolling issues in any case if an employer somehow hid from their employee that they were getting the minimum wage. There are ways to stretch out beyond 2 years in all these kinds of cases. So in 2 years, maybe the record keeping, it does not, even in the wage cases that exist now, it does not limit the liability or the outer boundary of liability for employers either federally or under state law. Beyond that, this hasn't been a problem in this case or in any other cases. No one is telling us, you know, in a rolling way, we destroy every record that's 2 years old. Right? That is, it's sort of a fictional problem. And just as a matter of law, the notion that could somehow control rights under a constitutional provision doesn't seem to me to be plausible. That if something has to give away, it would be the record-keeping provision. Just as businesses, lawyers tell them, you know, you need to keep it for 2 years. If it's a 4-year statute of limitations under the Minimum Wage Amendment, those attorneys should be informing those businesses, maybe you need to keep it a little bit longer.
Right? Sure.
Yes, sure.
Pose a couple of questions. As I understand your argument, one can still make a minimum wage claim under 608.250 subparagraph 1 today if they chose to do so. Is that right?
Honestly, I don't think so, but it's been done. I mean, I have proof, right? In the Terry case, it was done, and no one stood up and said, no, this doesn't exist anymore. So I take that on faith that in some universe, it still exists. In my mind,
hypothetically, Congress enacted a federal minimum wage of $15 an hour. Wouldn't a person in Nevada, wouldn't the Department of Labor, wouldn't the Labor Commissioner in Nevada alter the minimum wage amount based on the federal regulation?
Absolutely, would have to. Absolutely, don't.
And in that circumstance, a person would make a minimum wage claim in Nevada under 608.250.
Actually, the particular way that the minimum wage amendment is written, I think we'd probably still keep the 2 years, only Nevada would have then a $16 and $15 minimum wage as opposed to 1, Federal 15 trade. So I think that the minimum wage amendment would survive that. But I think that that's one way to think of it, perhaps.
Well, I guess the point I was making is I understand your argument. You've made a standalone claim under the constitutional amendment. And that doesn't mean, as a result of Thomas, that one can't still make a claim under 250, even though economically that might not be the smartest thing to do.
We certainly chose to make our claims under the minimum wage amendment. If I make one more comment, Your Honor, and I come back to this, in all these cases, it has to do with the remedial nature of the minimum wage amendment itself. You know, in case after case, where there is doubt as to what statute of limitations should be applied, and there may be some here, as I hear, the longer statute of limitations should be chosen because it goes to immune the benefits of the amendment to its clear beneficiaries. So I'll just close on that, Your Honor.
All right. Counsel, thank you for the briefing in this case. The briefing was very good. The arguments were very helpful. So thank both of you. This case will stand submitted.